Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We have some questions. One question submitted by Jai Radha Krishna Prabhu. Something about Vyasadeva refuting those terms. Well, one term we were talking about was Samavaya. Yes, Vyasadeva technically argues against the validity of the concept of inherent relationship, inherence. Relationship. Otherwise, we can have the relationship just based on contact. You know, a monkey is sitting on a tree. And then relationship between whole and part. The branch of the tree is part of the tree. Or identity. You know, what we call in taru in Sanskrit is the same thing as tree in English. That's just a relationship of identity. A tree is a taru. But as far as the color of the tree and hearing in the tree, Vyasadeva argues against that theory. You know, the Vaisheshika philosophy presents a certain model of existence based on seven categories. And he's rejecting, Vyasadeva rejecting, is attacking the system of ontology by arguing against the validity of one of those categories, the Samavaya. Yes, but as I mentioned in the other class, even though it's theoretically rejected, it's still a useful concept. And therefore we use it. Our Jiva Goswami talks about Samavaya, even though Vyasadeva finds it an untenable idea. We can think it's a useful fiction. There really is no such thing, but it's useful to think in terms of qualities in hearing, in substances, and so on. So it's not some peculiar that Jiva Goswami's got, you know, some, you know, circuits loose. No, it's everybody, not just Jiva Goswami. All the philosophers who are in the Vedanta school go ahead and use the concept of Samavaya for practical explanations. All of them. The Mayavadis and the Vaishnavas, everybody. Okay, there's something from Nityananda Prabhu. Oh, he's asking, in what context and why does Vyasadeva deny the Samavaya concept? Well, it's at the very beginning of the second chapter of the Vedanta Sutra. The second chapter is concerned with removing any obstacles to the presentation of the Absolute Truth in the Upanishads. There are opposing philosophies that try to contradict Vedanta philosophy. So Vyasadeva takes the offensive. Strongest defense is a strong offense. So he attacks each of the opposing philosophies and finds fault in them. And I think the very first one he attacks is this Vaisheshika philosophy. Not the very first. First he deals with the Shaktavad. But then he shows the flaws in the Vaisheshika worldview. And his strong point is the invalidity of Samavaya. So that's where it is. And the why is to remove all opposing philosophies that disagree with Vedanta. And there's a question here. Can you kindly repeat second part of the translation? Well, Nityananda was not here. So I think he wanted me to repeat the translation. I might as well wait until he comes. Where is he? Okay, so I won't. He hurt his back? He's on his way back. Okay, anyway, I'll hold off on the answer to that second question. From Vishnu Kanta. In Bhagavad Sandarbha Anuchet 2.2, the phrase sadhana vashat tadatmyam apane satyam is a little confusing. Okay, can you remind me, are we talking about the worshippers of Brahman or of Bhagavan here? Okay, so on the strength of their sadhana, some Brahmavadis actually attain the Brahmabhuta state. It doesn't mean that they merge into Brahman, but they realize their own pure spiritual nature, which is to be qualitatively one with Brahman. So that's tadatmayam, substantial equalness with Brahman. So, because other Brahmavadis are just talking theoretically, but some of them have actually realized their spiritual nature. That's the distinction here. Okay. Now, your question is it that by their sadhana the Brahmavadis attain the Brahmanness in terms of sat and chit? Well, yes. It's in terms of, by their sadhana of jnana, supported by the different yamas and niyamas, they somehow or other, some of them may manage to give up all material misidentification and realize themselves as Satchit Ananda. Even a little bit of impersonal Ananda is there. By sadhana, yes. It's not that the great god Brahman blesses them. It's not by blessings. It's by sadhana, basically, that the impersonalists achieve whatever they achieve. They're not into the strategy of prapatti, of taking shelter and getting mercy. They just work for their realization by sadhana. Buddhists are like that also. At least the Buddhists that we saw in Thailand, their idea is that every person has to work for his own realization. It's not just showered on you as a blessing. You have to work for it. Okay. Number two question. The Brahmavadis are described as tadgrahana asamarte chetasi yata samanyato lakshitam tataiva, that they are not able to grasp the variety of the Lord's internal energies and so on. So how can we should we understand that Sukadeva Goswami, being a Brahmavadi earlier, was able to appreciate the Lord's qualities and pastimes of liberating Putana, which are manifested from the Lord's internal potency? Any jiva has somewhere in him the potential to become a devotee of Krishna, because every jiva is eternally a servant of Krishna, even if he turns into a Brahmavadi. Sukadeva was a successful Brahmavadi. He was fully realized. By the mercy of Srimad Bhagavatam and of his father Vyasadeva, the seed of devotion was awakened in his heart. That seed is there in everybody's heart. And Sukadeva, although he was very impersonal, he wasn't envious. So the non-envious Brahmavadis, as opposed to the Mayavadis, they have hope of being attracted to Krishna consciousness. It can be done with good association, and especially by hearing from the Bhagavatam. Sukadeva was so ripe and so offenseless in his attitude that just by hearing the Bhagavatam a little bit from the disciples of Vyasadeva, his heart changed immediately. There's no mystery in that. Brahmavadis who are not envious, they can become attracted to Krishna. They previously were incapable of understanding the personality of the Supreme and the variety. But by good association and by good hearing, they can rise above that and gain the ability to understand the personality of Godhead, if they're not envious. Okay, that's those questions. There's still something else. Another one from Vishnu Kanta Prabhu on Anuchet 3.3, which is as far as we got last time. Well, I don't know if I'm prepared to answer this. I didn't really think about it. Let's see. Can you explain some yoga sambandha and some avaya sambandha in connection with the qualities and Lord as possessor of those qualities? Well, generally the personal qualities, the personal energies of the Lord are in an integral connection with him, which we can call, for convenience sake, we can call it samavaya sambandha. The energies are not different from the Lord. They're his energies, and they're really part of him. They're not something separate. But suppose I cook a chapati that didn't exist before. I make it myself, and I offer it to Krishna, and Krishna accepts it. So Krishna's holding the chapati in his hand. That's some yoga. Sambandha. Krishna can, you know, make contact with his external energy, and that can be considered some, just physical contact. Yeah. Krishna is not in integral relationship. Well, he is, but he's not integral. He's integral relationship with Prakriti, the deity, but not with the material energy. But you can say he can be physically in the world and physically in contact with it. So that would be some yoga. But his own qualities, his own energies, his internal energies, that's all integral, intimate relationship. Some yoga relationship is mere physical contact. Just like Krishna comes in the material world, he's not really connected with it. He's just physically, you know, next to it. That's some yoga. That's just an example of one example of inheritance. But that is an example of the product inhering in its causes, in its ingredient causes. Cloth is made out of threads. And it's not like you dissolve the threads and by chemical change it turns into cloth. No, the threads stay there. They're still there. There's no chemical change or transformation of the threads. Threads don't change, but they're just, you know, tied up together in a certain order, and they turn into a cloth. But that's one example of a inherence relationship. The cloth is inhering in the threads. There's a product inhering in a particular kind of cause, ingredient cause. But that's only one kind of inherence. Qualities inhere in substances. Movements inhere in substances, according to Vaisheshika theory. The dog is brown. That brownness is inhering in, there's a relationship, the brownness is inhering in the dog, not the dog inhering in the brownness, but the brownness of the dog. If the dog evaporates, you know, he just goes to Vaikuntha or something happens to him, then the brownness is out of existence. Because according to Vaisheshika theory, the brownness of each brown thing is unique. It's not identical with the brownness of some other dog or some other thing. So if the dog goes out of existence, then his brownness goes out of existence. The brownness is dependent on the dog for its existence. It only exists as such in hearing, in that relationship of inherence with the dog. And also, if the dog is running, that particular act of running doesn't exist separate from the dog. So it's inhering in the dog. Those are other. So the Lord's activities and qualities inhere in him, like the brownness and the running of the dog. The inherence of the cloth and the threads, that's a different kind. You can say that the creation inheres in the Supreme Lord, not the other way around. He's the cause. He doesn't have a cause, so he can't inhere in it. He can't inhere in any cause because he doesn't have any cause. But he as the cause, can have everything that comes from him and here in him. Okay? All right. Second question. I saw an explanation of the word achyuta by our acharyas in their commentary on 1.8.16. Sva ashrita astra bhushana guna vibhutyadin na chyavayati na pritok karoti iti achyuta. Well, chyavayati is causative. What's the subject? I think you didn't give me the whole sentence. There must be a subject going along with chyavayati is causative. What? No. But you see, he's not the subject. Is he? Whose commentary is this? Okay, anyway. And that's meaning of the word achyuta, that he doesn't separate himself from the weapons, the ornaments, the qualities, and the opulences that depend on him. Does this meaning of achyuta suggest the samavaya sambandha between the astrabhushana ityadi? Yes, it is. The weapons of the Lord are not just temporarily in his hands. I can hold a disc in my hands. I can make a cardboard chakra and hold it in my hands. Or I use a CD disc and pretend I'm Vishnu. But that's just some yoga. I just have physical contact with that thing. I have no inherent relationship with it. It's not my eternal weapon, the CD disc. But Vishnu, his chakra, is eternally his weapon. It exists only in a sub, it exists in a samavaya relationship with him, especially since it's non-different from him. So yes, you're right. That is, his astras, bhushanas, gunas, and vibhutis all are in samavaya relationship with him. Okay, that answers all the questions that I received. We can look now. I think we're up to 3.4. You have a question? Okay, technically that should also go be submitted, but go ahead.
About Brahmaji sadhana, because you know, they must know this verse, Nayamam Atma Pravachinin Labhyo, Namedaya, Nabuhudashudena, and also they appreciate the importance of spiritual master, at least in their prayers to this Totaka Acharya. He composes prayers to Shankaracharya.
Yes.
So they chanted. So to which extent they accept it, and to which extent they depend on their own abilities in their sadhana? They accept mercy or some blessings.
Well, they claim that it's everything. You know, the mercy of Guru is everything, because the Guru is God. You know, they got a wrong idea of Guru. They think Guru is God, and therefore everything comes from him. You know, all the blessings come from the Guru because he's God. But that's not the way it really works. You know, we accept Guru as servant of God, representative of God, and God gives the benefits, but it comes on the request of the Guru. So they got that mixed up. Even though they make a big fuss about Guru, they're confused. You know, they just don't understand what the Guru is. They think he's God himself. And then, my writers have a habit of, when they think they've become pervert, they just get rid of their guru. They don't need him anymore. Prabhupada says sometimes they even murder their gurus. Yeah. So it's one thing is it's unrealistic. You're treating the guru as something he's not, as God. And then, you know, how come when you've gotten what you want from him, you don't want him anymore? You know, just inconsistent.
So they don't have this any conception on dependence of like Brahman's mercy, according to this verse, Nayam Atma Pravachanin Labhyo.
they have a concept of it, but it's a twisted version of the concept. You know, mercy is just something you get, you know, it's just a commodity to be gained by borrowing or stealing. You know, it's like, you know, like cow's ghee. Get, beg, borrow, steal, and get ghee. So grab the mercy. You know, grab those feet and squeeze them as hard as you can and get the mercy. But they don't understand what mercy is. Mercy is something you get in exchange for service and devotion. So it's all, you know, they're big talk. All the ideas were there, but the understanding of them is just twisted. Okay, but we should move on. Okay. No, but yeah. You can write down the questions or send them. Now we're going to move into 3.4. Tadetad brahmasarupam bhagavat shabdena vachyam natu lakshyam. So, the original self of Brahman is indicated by the word Brahman. The original self of Brahman is indicated by the word Bhagavan. Literally, not merely in a figurative way. Okay, we've been studying this Lakshana Vritti in the Kavya class. Here's an application of it. Okay, how does that work? The word Bhagavan doesn't just figuratively describe Brahman, it's literally describing Brahman. The Swarupa, the essential, original identity of Brahman, is literally described by the word Bhagavan. It's not just metaphorical to call him Bhagavan. Mayavadi would say it's metaphorical, because Bhagavan is not the whole absolute truth. It's Saguna Brahman. It's tainted by duality, Bhagavan. And so Bhagavan is not really Brahman. It's only metaphorically Brahman. But Jiva Goswami is rejecting that idea and saying, no, the word Bhagavan literally describes Brahman. And actually, weren't we reading from... No, that was back in the Tapasandarbha, wasn't it? We read a... remind me here. We read a passage from who knows where. Oh, yeah, from Vishnu Purana. No, it was right here. It was in 3.2. Please don't... I'm sorry, but don't crack knuckles. Okay. Yeah, let me find the words here. Tad Brahma Paramam Dhamma Tad Yayam, all that description of Brahman. And then it says, Tade Tad Bhagavad Vachyam Swarupam Paramatmanaha. It's called, that Brahman is called Bhagavan, and that's the real Swarupa of the Paramatma. Those are the words of the Vishnu Purana that were quoted back in 3.2. Now we're at 3.4. Referring back to that, affirming that, making the proposition that the word Bhagavan literally describes Brahman, not just figuratively. Okay, continuing. Tadeva nirdharayati Bhagavad shabdo yam tasya nadiva shesha shaganga shabdavad vachaka eva natu tata shabdavad lakshaka evam sati Akshara Samyan Nirbruyad Iti Niruktamatam Ashritya Rudhim Apyashritya Bhagadi Shabdanam Artam Aha Sambarteti. Okay, so this is Jiva Goswami's explanation of that passage of the Vishnu Purana, especially the part that is explaining the meaning of the word Bhagavan by discussing the meaning of each of the syllables of the word. Right, first ba means sambarta and so on, and then ga means this. So that was there. So why he's doing that is explained here. He's giving an explanation why that's done. The Vishnu Purana thus specifically ascertains that this word, Bhagavan, is the direct name of the Supreme. So we're giving some proof of that. Just as the word Ganga is the literal name of that particular river, rather than an indirect reference to the river as the word shore would be. Okay, we had Ganga referring figuratively to the shore. We might do it the other way around and have the word shore. You know, I'd really like to be on the shore of the Ganga. Well, what do you want to be on the shore of the Ganga for? It's just muddy ground. You want to sit in the mud? No, I want to be on the shore of the Ganga. You know, I sing a song. I want to be on the shore of the Ganga. But what do you mean is you want to be there at the Ganga and take a snan there. But you say metaphorically, I want to be on the shore. So that's using it tatta to metaphorically refer to the river itself. But when you say the name Ganga, that's literal. The name Ganga refers directly to the river. It's not a metaphorical reference. It's specifically identifying that river and nothing else. And in that way, Bhagavan also is directly referring to the original identity of the Absolute Truth, not metaphorically. Okay. Such being the case, the Purana, which Purana? Vishnu Purana, uses the method of analyzing word meaning in terms of usage established by convention in accordance with the opinion of the Nirukta. I think I have a mistake here. It's actually two different things, the way I just read it. Yeah, because there's two ashrityas. The verb comes twice. So actually, we're resorting to two different things. First of all, the method of analyzing a word one syllable at a time. Second, resorting to identification of the conventional meaning. So I didn't translate that correctly. I mixed them together. I said, uses the method of analyzing word meaning in terms of usage established by convention, according with the opinion of the Nirukta. No. Can I make a note here to myself? No, there are two different acts of first to Akshara Samya, then also to. Okay, I'm sorry I have to take time to do this, but I'm making a note to correct it. Okay. So actually what I should say is the Purana uses the method of it does two things. It uses the method of analyzing word meaning in terms of the principle described in the Nirukta, that one can interpret a word's meaning by matching each syllable of the word with its own individual meaning. And the Vishnu Purana does that. And then secondly, it also helps it analyze the word Bhagavan by looking at the conventional meaning of the components, Bhaga and Van, especially the component Bhaga. Bhaga can mean any opulence. It can also mean other things. It has multiple meanings. But one meaning is opulence. Well, everybody's got some opulence. I've got a few rupees in my pocket. That's my opulence. But when we're talking about Bhaga in its conventional sense, and in the verse Aishwarasya Samagrasya, it defines that the Bhagas we're talking about are all fame, all opulence, all power, all beauty, infinite beauty, not just finite, limited opulence assets, but infinite assets in these six categories. That's the conventional meaning of Bhaga that makes up the meaning of the word Bhagavan. The one who has got those Bhagas, he's Bhagavan. Otherwise, by simple derivation, everybody's Bhagavan. Everybody's got some opulences. So maybe some people are relatively more Bhagavan, but the proper conventional meaning of Bhagavan is only one person, the Supreme Lord, who's got all the opulences infinitely. So that's the rudi element in properly interpreting the word Bhagavan. But we also, the Vishnu Purana is also looking at the poetic meaning of each of the syllables and helping explain to us the meaning of the whole word by looking at the individual syllables. Okay, in this way, the Vishnu Purana describes the meaning of Bhaga and other words, starting with the verse beginning Sambarta, okay, where the analysis syllable by syllable begins, Sambarteti. Now go back to the Sanskrit. Sambarta swabhaktanam poshaka. Barta, dharaka, stapaka, ityartaha. Neta, swabhakti palasya premnak prapakaha. Well, those were two meanings of ba, and now three meanings of ga. The two meanings of ba are sambarta and barta. And Jiva Goswami shows how the two have different meanings. Sambarta is one thing and barta is the other. And then neta, swabhakti palasya premnak prapakaha, gamayata, swaloka prapaka, shrashta, swabhakteshu tad tad gunas yod gamayita. So those are the three meanings of the syllable ga. Neta, gamayita, and shrashta. Okay, translation of that. The word sambarta means the nourisher of his devotees. The word barta means upholder, or in other words, establisher. Neta means leader, means he who gives achievement of pure love, the fruit of his devotional service. Gamayita, propeller, means he who gives achievement of his own world. Srashta, creator, means he who brings about within his devotees the manifestation of their various good qualities. Now you notice these are, Jiva Goswami is giving special interpretations of these words, neta, gamayita, and srashta. Gamayita is just causative, someone who makes somebody else go. Shrashta is someone who creates something. But Jiva Goswami is giving very specific devotional meanings to these words. Could someone check whether this is right there in Sridhar Swami's commentary? Oh no, this is Vishnu Purana, not Bhagavatama. There is a Sridhar Swami commentary, we don't have it in our computers. You have a copy, but scanned copy. You have it? We have it upstairs. Okay, no, don't bother. Okay, well, let's get to the end of it, and then you can read it. Okay, and then... okay. Let me see if I read all the Sanskrit here. Okay, jagat poshakari tvam tu tasya paramparayaiva natu sakshad iti gyayam. Thus we can infer that the Supreme Lord's being the nourisher, yes, forget the word thus. In fact, I'll take it out right now. Because the logical connection is not there for thus. This is just an additional idea. Because we're talking about explaining the ba and the ga in terms of the Lord's special relationship with his devotees, rather than talking about him being the creator of the material world. So, what about his being the material creator? Well, we can infer that the Supreme Lord's being the nourisher of material creation, he's also Barta and Sambarta of the material world, but that's actually done by him through secondary agents, not directly. So we'd rather talk about what he does directly in relationship with his devotees as explanation of the word Bhagavan. Okay, now we got that verse, Aishwarasya Samagrasya. And Jiva Goswami has something to say about that. aishwaryam sarva vashikaritvam samagrasya iti sarva tranveti viryam mani mantra der eva prabhavaha yashak van manak shariranam sad gunya kyatihi shri sarva prakara sampat gyanam sarvagyatvam vairagyam panch prapancha vastv vanus anasaptihi ingana samgya. Oh, Hare Krishna. Aishwarya, controlling power, is the subjugation of everything and everyone and everything. That's controlling power, or aishwarya. The word all, samagrasya, modifies all the qualities stated here. It's not just all the aishwarya and then some of the other ones. No, all six categories of qualities. All of them in total. The word all modifies all the qualities stated here. Virya, potency, is special power like that of precious stones, mantras, and so on. It's not just masculinity or heroism we're talking about. We're talking about mystic power, like the power of... See, stones are not just valuable on the market, but they have mystic powers. Medicinal powers and other powers to control the mind are deposited in precious jewels if they're potent enough. If it's pure and the right size, then stones can have mystic powers. Mantras also, herbs can have mystic powers. That's virya. Yashas, fame, is the Supreme Lord's reputation for the transcendental qualities of his speech, mind, and body. Shri, opulence, is all varieties of wealth. Sometimes Shri is probably translated as beauty, sometimes as opulence, and here we're translating it as all varieties of wealth. Aishwarya, which is also translated sometimes as opulence, here Jiva Goswami is taking Aishwarya to mean controlling power, and Shri means opulent assets in general, all kinds of wealth. Money is wealth, grains is wealth, real estate is wealth, animals, cows and other animals, that's wealth. Jnana, knowledge, is omniscience. Not just knowing something, but knowing everything. Vairagya, renunciation, is detachment from the things of material creation. Not detachment from his devotees and from the spiritual world, but detachment from material things. Ingana, indication. Well, it said that these six are the inganas of Bhaga. So ingana, indication, means name. These are the names of his six categories of Bhagas. Ingana means name. Okay, there's a commentary on this three. We're still not done with three. That's only 3.4. There's 3.6, and I think that's it. 3.6 is the end. But here's the commentary for 3.4. Vachya and Lakshya are two of the major modes of word reference recognized by authorities on Sanskrit poetry. These are potential participles, but they're the same thing as abhida and lakshana. They're just using different words for the same two concepts, direct meaning and figurative meaning. The literal meaning of a word is its vachya reference. Potential participle means that the thing that is to be expressed, the idea that is to be expressed, the meaning is vachya or lakshya, past potential participle. It's to be expressed literally or to be expressed figuratively. So the literal meaning of a word is its vachya reference. But even in the most prosaic day-to-day speech, words are often used in more figurative ways. You know, even when you're just talking very loosely, you're using metaphors. You know, you call somebody an ass, you're using a metaphor. Even though you're not doing it with poetic inspiration, you're just doing it out of anger. For example, when Krishna called Arjuna Purusha Vyagra, O lion among men, he did not mean to say that Arjuna was literally a four-legged beast. The context of a statement in which a certain word cannot be allowed to express its literal meaning necessitates recognizing a Lakshya reference. Arjuna is called a lion because he shares some of the qualities of a lion, like courage and strength. What kind of Lakshana is that? Gauni Lakshana. Because it's based on quality rather than any more concrete relationship. It's not Shuddha, it's Gauni. In general, the Lakshya, or figurative meaning, is something proximate or similar to the literal meaning. The sacred river flowing through Hardwar and Navadvip is literally called Ganga. But in figurative language, the same river might be also indirectly referred to by the word Tira, shore, on the grounds that the shore is adjacent to the river. I think the verse, the Anuchay says Tata instead of Tira. Maybe I should change it to Tata. Tata, yeah. Let's make it Tata, not to confuse the readers. Can I fix that? Let's take a second. Okay, Tata it is. A poet, for example, might write, "Oh, when will I stand on that sacred shore?" Bhagawan, Srila Jiva asserts, is a literal name of the Supreme, not mere indirect reference to him. Impersonalists of Shankara's Advaitavad Sampradaya postulate that because the personality of Godhead is Saguna, possessed of qualities, he is an illusory degradation of Nirguna Brahman, the ultimately real Supreme without qualities. They argue that whatever the Shrutis say about qualities of the Supreme are only descriptions of Saguna Brahman, pointing to the Supreme by indirect Lakshya reference. This Srila Jiva here denies. The ancient sage Yaska was an expert on derivation of word meanings. His Nirukta commented on the older Nirguntu, a vocabulary in several chapters, in several categories of difficult to understand words of the Vedas. Okay, the Nirguntu came first. That's just a list, a word list, of in different categories of difficult to understand words in the Vedas. The definitions aren't given, just a list of words. That's the original Nirguntu. Nirukta is a commentary on the Nirguntu by Yaska. At the beginning of the second chapter of the Nirukta, Yaska sets forth his principles of etymology. He suggests a first alternative to be taken when possible of explaining a word's meaning in terms of its grammatical formation. This explanation should be easy if a known verb root can be recognized within the word and if the transformation of the root into the given word can be credibly modeled by the standard rules of Sanskrit grammar. In cases where such grammatical derivation is not feasible, one may resort to finding a synonym whose derivation can be demonstrated for the word in question. So you can't find the derivation of the word itself, well, get a word that's synonymous with it. and look for the derivation of that other word. That might help. To explain what the word means. If I don't know what a word means, if I'm given a synonym of it and I know what the synonym means, that's what you do with a dictionary. A dictionary in the same language will just give you synonyms for the word you don't know. And hopefully you know the synonyms. So if you can derive the synonyms, a synonym of a word, that's second best to being able to directly derive the word itself by rules of grammar. And for when even this is not possible, Yaska proposes a third alternative in the phrase cited by Jiva Goswami in this Anuchid. One can try to show the origin of the word's meaning by matching the individual syllables of the word with the same syllables in other words. That's the Akshara Samya. Ba, okay, what does ba mean? Well, what does it mean in other words? How about like the word sambarta and barta? You know, I take that meaning and apply it to the ba in Bhagavan. Of course, this is far-fetched, because in real life, every syllable doesn't have its own meaning. But it's a last resort for trying to figure out the meaning of a word. This method may be less scientific and more an exercise of poetic imagination. It may not actually reflect the word's historical development, but at least, according to Yaska, it is better than giving up altogether on the effort to explain why a word means what it does. Okay, you may know what it means, but you want to give an explanation. Why does it mean that? It's not that nobody knows what Bhagavan means, but you want to give an explanation. Why does it mean? Why does Bhagavan mean what it means? Authorized scriptures often use this Akshara Samya method to shine further light on ideas that have already been established by more certain means. You've already proven something properly, then you can add on some of this syllable-by-syllable analysis just for extra effect. The whole proof is not dependent on it because it's not completely reliable. Since the qualities of Bhagavan are known from the testimony of venerable sages and of Bhagavan himself, there is no harm in adding to this evidence the figurative derivations of Akshara Samya. Sage Parashara identifies the primary reference of the name Bhagavan by stipulating that each of the opulences of Bhagavan is complete, samagra. Others may be sometimes honored with the title Bhagavan, but their opulences can only be partial reflections of the unbounded originals in the personality of Godhead. And so these other persons are Bhagavan only figuratively. Okay. I think that's enough for now. We'll continue with this tomorrow. Send me your questions one way or another. And we'll have the Kavya class at 11 o'clock. What are you going to do at 10 o'clock? Jennifer was not here yet. Okay. Anyway, I'll be back to give my coffee class at 11. He's been having his at 12. Anyway, whatever. Okay. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Bhagavat Sundar Bhakti.